Okay, so we're up to the Yesod HaShishi. Yesod HaShishi. So we finished the first five relate to Kadosh Baruch Hu himself. And then Yesod HaShishi HaNevuah. So that relates to the way God communicates with humanity. V'hu sheyeda ha'adam, shezem min ha'adam yimatze bohem ba'alei tevoim, mimidos me'ulos, v'zakos ma'od u'shlemus gedola. So he waxes poetic here about Nevi'im. And he says, there are some people, ba'alei tevoim, so that's an interesting lashon over here, that there is, they have this particular nature about them, mimidos me'ulos v'zakos ma'od u'shlemus gedola. Right? So that they have these very, very high level midos, and they're very pure, and they are complete in their personalities. V'nashosem nechonos, and they have, again, another positive of description of their soul. Ad shehin mekablos tsuras hasecho. They have some. They have basically a certain type of a spiritual mindset. Acharechein yidbak oso hasechel onoshi besechel hapoel. And then, based on that, so their human intellect can somehow connect to this godly intellect, v'net salimenu alav atzilus nichbada, right? And it has some type of an amazing effect on them. They can have some type of an incredible influence, and the Kodesh Baruch Hu can speak to them, generally speaking, as we'll talk about the difference between the sixth and the seventh yesod, Hashem will speak to them through an intermediary. And ve'elohim ha'nevi'im, and these types of people are called nevi'im, v'zohi ha'nevuah, and this connection to these spiritual forces is what we call prophecy, v'zehu inyanim. That's basically what it is. Now, the Rambam, I believe, is of the opinion that you have to be born with this, right? That's the Rishonim are split on this issue. Is nevuah an inborn characteristic, or is it something that anyone can achieve? Right, this that comes up in the beginning of Sefer Yirmiyahu, where Yirmiyahu is told, "Terem etzarcha bebetan yidaticha," right, "Navi lagayim nisaticha," that he says, "I already knew even before I created you, that or before you were born, that you were going to become a navi." And the Radak over there says, "Well, we all know the Rambam, who says that every navi is, you know, is known from before he is born that he has the ability to become a Navi." So what's the Chiddush over here? So the Radak, okay, he answers for Yirmiyahu, you know, the way he answers. But that's the, so you see the, and the Radak agrees with the Rambam. The Radak thinks that is the correct way to look at it. Yeah.
Does that apply for the Yod also, or just the Yod?
Yeah, I think anybody who can achieve certain levels, meaning it doesn't mean that once had a professor who I mentioned a different opinion, basically that so he basically said that you know, anyone can achieve nevuah, or he was talking also about when you read the Mor Nevuchim, do the three lowest levels of the Rambam has 10 levels of nevuah there, and the three lowest levels of nevuah are considered Ruach HaKodesh. So he tainted not, but I thought the way I learned it when I was younger was that the three lowest levels of Nevuah are Ruach HaKodesh. That's what the Rambam calls Ruach HaKodesh, the three bottom levels of Nevuah. And so basically, L'shitaso, you would have to say that in order to achieve Ruach HaKodesh, you have to be born into it. So I said that to him, and he was sort of like, he didn't understand what I was saying. He's a brilliant man, but he wasn't a good communicator. So he didn't understand what I was saying, so he said, "Oh, I see why you're saying that, because I believe that the Gedolei Yisrael have Ruach HaKodesh, and you believe that they don't." I'm like, that's not what I meant. He's like, "Yeah, because according to you, when there's no more nevuah anymore, so mela, there's no more Ruach HaKodesh anymore, because it's the bottom three levels of nevuah. So if the Gemara says there's no more nevuah, so then it can't be Ruach HaKodesh either." So I'm like, I guess that would be an offshoot of what I was saying, but that's not what I meant to say.
Because I think I learned one time that with Hilda, she merited having nevuah because her husband would like sit by the gates and like give water to people traveling by. So that makes it sound like she achieved it because of something that her husband did. It, like she wasn't born with it.
Right. So to be clear, not everyone who's born with the genetics to be a Navi is a Navi.
Right.
I have no idea what the percentages are, but I'm guessing it's low. Right? And we have, meaning we have, we find this in, say, for Shmuel, when, you know, Shmuel had a yeshiva for Nevi'im, where he would go. I don't know that he was able, I don't know that he had an admissions process that included, you know, checking your soul to see whether or not you had what it took to be a Navi. It was, there was, they were, you know, the only person I'm aware of who gained Nevuah without meriting it was Bilam. I don't know that anybody else just got it. Meaning, it's generally speaking, at least what it seems from that case where, by Shmuel, is that you could, if you had what it took to get Nevuah, you still had to concentrate on it for days at a time. You had to try to, basically, you had to do things to purify yourself and to try to communicate with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and only then would it be even possible to receive a Nevuah. And it would still be Hashem's choice whether he reached out to you. I mean, you only find in last week's Parsha this concept of solicitation, you know, of schnorring Nevuah, where you have, you know, as Shiva Mizbechos Arachti, right? So you have this whole idea that you can sort of try to chop some Ruach HaKodesh when Hashem sort of sneaks by you to try to eat his karbanos. And, you know, it wasn't really, you know, that's, I don't know, I have a whole thesis that's what corrupted Bilam in the first place. Meaning, as an aside, the question that Chazal deal with is that, why did Bilam get Nevuah? So what's the answer? Why did Bilam get Nevuah? Because it wasn't fair, right? The Umos HaOlam could have complained, if you would have given us a Navi, then we also would have been great. We also would have achieved great things. So what did Hashem do?
Gave
them a Navi. So what's the kasha on that?
It wasn't a good Navi.
Right. Thanks for nothing. Like, you didn't give us a Navi who was worth anything. So what's the answer to that? Why was it actually an appropriate thing? Why was Bilam the perfect Navi for this Taina?
Yeah, the potential to be like Avraham, he wasn't.
Right, but, well, his Nevuos were probably on a higher level than Avraham. His Nevuos were on a level like Moshe Rabbeinu. He was basically bumped up to the highest level for free. Right, So what, you know, if you look at the psychological studies they do, it's not even psychology, but like social science, when they do studies of lottery winners, so it's shocking what happens to these people, no? Isn't it shocking? I'm shocked by it. I don't even play the lottery and I'm shocked by it. Like, you would think you win the lottery, so mainly you want to say you're not any better off than you were before, but these people, like a significant percentage of the people, their lives are destroyed. Like, they're so much worse off than when they started, right? It's strange, no? Like, you would think, okay, so Mele, you won't be better off, you'll be the same, whatever, you know, but their lives are often much worse off. It's because, I think the what they say is that when you get something that you didn't earn, you really just, it corrupts you because you don't know what to do with it. You don't understand what it means to have something. If you earn it, so there's a good chance that you'll utilize it properly and you'll respect it and you'll know what it means. But to just have something thrown upon you and you're not ra'oi for it, it corrupts you. And the more you get, the more it corrupts you. And Bilam was corrupted by his Nevuah. It was just something, you know, he was, as you'll see, as you go through, especially if you end up in your chosen field, you'll see that you can deal with pretty much any type of a person. The person in the world whom it's hardest to deal with is a spoiled brat. Anyone else can be dealt with. Spoiled brats can also be dealt with, but it's really, really way more difficult than anything else. And spoiled brats, they don't understand the value of anything. And it's so hard to try to connect to someone who doesn't understand the value of anything. And Bilam was a spoiled brat of prophecy. He didn't understand. He was a lottery winner of prophecy. He just was chosen by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's why it was the perfect response. Saying, you say, if you just give us a Navi, we'll be great. So I'll show you what happens when I just give you something. And you don't earn it and it doesn't mean anything to you. Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't great because of what I gave him. Moshe Rabbeinu was great because of what he was, what he achieved, and what the Jewish people deserved. He was the Navi that they were entitled to based on their history, based on who they were and what they could have been. Bilam is an example of me giving you something. So if you're a Navi, you have to achieve in order to achieve that Nevuah. Even if you hold like the Rambam that you have to have the Nevuah gene, still you have to achieve in order to be a Navi. You can't just be given it. You're not just, it's not something you get automatically. It's very, whatever. There are a lot of strange things you hear about. I was reading an article once about a well-known Mekubal who is, he's legit. He's a real big Talmud Chacham, and he gives a lot of Shurim and Nigla and Nistar and whatever. And like, I don't know if he really gave this interview, and if he did, it's so weird. Because like, he gave this interview in one of these Jewish like Voss is Nice or something, and like, he was saying like, when he was a kid, he could already read people's minds, and like, whatever. I'm like, why? Why could you read people's minds? You didn't learn a word of anything. Like, so I didn't really chop what like the message was over there. Like, I always had powers, and like, I just decided to become a big Talmud Chacham later, despite my powers, because I had powers. I don't know what it means that people have powers. So I don't really get it. But like, but yeah, the idea is that you, when even if you have the ability to be a Navi, so you still have to achieve in order to make it real. So going further, he says, "Ubir yisod ze alburio yerach ma'od." I have to speak a lot about this to really explain it. The inkava nasein lahavi mofes al kol yisod mehem ubir mitzias hasagasa. Afishazeu klal hachachmos kulan. Right, it can't really basically it can't really explain all the different aspects of it. Aval eskareim derech sipur bilvad umikroya Torah meidim al nevuot sneviim harbe. Right, so he says rather. I'll just mention it, you know, as an aside, and there's many, many psukim that talk about nevuah, obviously. So there's nothing really for me to add when it comes to these ideas. Now, the Rambam in the Mishneh Torah does write extensively about the halachas of listening to a Navi, and even in the Akdama LePirush HaMishneh, he discusses the halachas of listening to a Navi, and they're relevant, obviously, in some of the other yesodos here. So we'll try to just get to the seventh yesod to differentiate between Moshe Rabbeinu and a regular Navi, and and by understanding that, you'll understand a lot about the regular Nevuah, and you'll understand a lot about Moshe Rabbeinu based on the contrast. So let's go to the yesod HaShvi. Nevuas Moshe Rabbeinu Olav HaShalom. So the seventh yesod is Shenamin ki hu avihem shel kol ha-Naviyim asher hayu milafanav v'asher kamu me'achrav. He is the father of all prophets, and doesn't matter whether they came before him or they came after him. Kulam heim tachtav v'mailo. All of them are below him in terms of the level of their prophecy versus his. Hu haya hanivchar mikol mina adam asher hisig midiyaso yizbarach yoser mikol masher hisig o yasig shum adam shenimtza o sheyimatze. And that which he understood, and that which his ability and his knowledge of God achieved was greater than anyone who lived before him or will live after him. V'chihu olav ha'shalom higio his aluso min ha'enoshus ad shehisig ha'maila ha'malachutit v'nichlal b'malas ha'malachim. He basically transcended humanity to the point that he was much more of a he had more of angelic qualities to him than he did human qualities to him. Lo nishar masach shelo kura'o v'nichnas mimeno, and there were no shades, there were no curtains between him and God that were separating him. He went through them all. V'lo mena'u monea gufani, and there was nothing physical that was holding him back to achieve this level. Shelo kro v'nichna, I'm sorry. V'lo nisare v'lo shum chesron bein rav l'ma'at. There was nothing, you know, there was nothing lacking in his whether it be a small or a big thing that would hurt him from achieving this. And he was able to overcome all of his senses, meaning his regular senses, to that would normally hold a person back. The five senses that we use actually hold a person back from achieving nevuah. He was basically able to just use his intellect. When we speak of spirituality, the Rambam speaks of seichel. So that's basically a synonym in the Rambam's world. So the Moshe Rabbeinu was all seichel. The ala inyan azeh nemar alav shu medaber im Hashem yisbarach below emtzayus min ha-malachim. He spoke to God without any intermediaries from the malachim. So in the previous yisod, the Rambam hinted at the fact that on regular Navi connects to a malach, whereas Moshe Rabbeinu connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself. And he continues with the differences between Moshe Rabbeinu's nevuah and the other neviim. Ritzoni haya levar kan zel inyan nifla viliftoach hanaul b'mekros haTorah lefarsh tam pe el pe. So he says, what I'm trying to do here is explain what the Torah means when it says, "I speak to God pe el pe adaber bo." Right? When did Hashem say pe el pe adaber bo? Right at the very end of Parshas Bahaloscha, when Miriam spoke to Aaron about Moshe Rabbeinu, that's really when Hashem opened up about the differences between Moshe Rabbeinu's nevuah and their nevuah, and he basically said, "You're way off here in terms of comparing yourself to Moshe Rabbeinu." V'chol ha'pasuk v'zulasu mi'inyano, right? And this is what that whole pasuk over there is talking about. Lule she'ra'isi she'ela inyanim dakin ma'od v'yitzdarchu l'rayos harbim. Rabos Maod says, I would talk more about it, but these are small chilukim that are hard to make, and I really need to prove that at great length. V'hayinu tzrichim lahatzos rabos v'hakdamos u'mishalim. We need to give a lot of introductions and mishalim shenivar betchila metzius ha-malachim v'shinui ma'aloseim en ha-borei yisala. Right, and he said, first we'd have to talk about the existence of malachim and how they differ from HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself. V'shenevara nefesh chol kodem. Then I'd have to talk about the soul. He talks a lot about this, I think, in the beginning of the Shmona Prakim, the segments of a person's soul and all the abilities of the soul. V'yirachim ha'igul ad shenedar b'tzuraso shezachor anavim sheroil aboril malachim ikanis b'zesh. All right, so basically he waxes poetic over here about how long it would take to discuss this. And therefore he says, I'll leave it aside. But what I do want to, he says, ze ha-yisod ha-shviv, I do want to talk about this particular yisod. There were four differences between Moshe's nevuah and everybody else. So harishon, the first, ki eze navi shehaya lo diber bo Hashem yisbarach. So this we already mentioned. Every other Navi only spoke to HaKadosh Baruch Hu al-Ede al-Emtza'i. They used an intermediary. Right? A Malach to speak to Moshe. U-Moshe below Emtza'i, Shenem ar pe'el pe'ad arbo. That we spoke about already. Shem spoke to Moshe Rabbeinu pe'el pe', meaning he heard whatever it means, God's own voice, not the Malach's voice. V'ha'inyan ha'sheni. Ki kol Navi lo savolo ha'nevua el kishuhu yashin. Any Navi needed to be asleep in order to achieve prophecy. Kimosha Amar b'mkomo b'chalom ha'layla, right? It says b'chalom ha'layla that this happens by dream. B'chalom chazion layla, right? So that's referring to Eov when he heard from Hashem. V'rab me'inyan zeh o b'yom, or could have been during the day as well. Asher tipol tardema ala adam be'inyan sheyizbatlu b'menu kol har goshasav v'tishor machshavto pnuya k'inyan chalom. Right, he says, what would be the point of this? He would have to be completely completely devoid of his other senses, and therefore it would have to be like a dream. Right, so in other words, basically a regular Navi had to be asleep in order to achieve Nevuah. Now elsewhere, the Rambam and others describe what it means that they needed to be asleep. Basically, it wasn't sleep like we consider sleep, and this will become clearer in the Inyan Ashlishi, but it was much more of what you can see when you, if you've ever been under anesthesia, if you've seen someone under, you ever seen anybody under anesthesia? So how do they look?
Dead.
They look dead, right? Now, obviously, they're sleeping, but it's much deeper than a sleep. It's much more like if you were asleep and someone cut you open, you would wake up and scream a lot. But when you're under anesthesia, you really don't feel it because you're in a much, much deeper sense of sleep. And obviously, your sense of touch, your sense of smell, your sense of hearing, all of that is completely knocked out. And that's along the lines of what the Rambam is talking about here, is that our physical senses hurt our ability to achieve nevuah. And the more gashmi we are, the harder it is to connect to something which is kulo ruchni. And this is in keeping with the Rambam's general theme of that the real world is the spiritual world, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Kulo Ruchni, and he doesn't exist in the physical world at all. And therefore, in order to achieve Nevuah, you have to negate all of your physicality. You hear what I'm saying? That's what he's saying over here. Yeah.
Is it kind of like I'm like picturing it visually, like the more gosh we are, it's almost like layers on top of you that's like preventing you from like hearing it, but like the medium are more like, I don't know.
Yeah, you could call it layers. Right. So that's
like the medium like have to be like stripped of all that in order to like connect.
Heard that lesson from your father before.
Oh really?
Yeah. So the yeah, it's definitely a good muscle for it would be to be, you have these different layers of gashmis
so
on you, and
you,
right, so you, that's one way to think about it. You have to negate, whatever makes sense to you in terms of negating your physicality, right? So the Rambam is equating physicality to the five senses, that you, in order to, quote unquote, tap into your sixth sense, you have to first negate the five senses. If there's so much noise and there's so much, I don't know if you, when I was a kid, I used to really like all the kung fu movies. So like they negated all, you have to like, in order to, be able to fight somebody with a blindfold on, you first have to block out all your other senses. So you put on a blindfold and you stop your hearing and you, whatever, and you can focus in on the sixth sense, whatever it may be. So in reality, the sixth sense that the Rambam was talking about is Nevuah. It's the ability to connect in a purely sikhli way. And therefore, you have to stop your hearing and your, even those things that we don't connect, like smell, we don't connect to physicality as much. That's why we smell the besamim and Motzoi Shabbos, because it's... Smell is the most physical?
Spiritual.
What?
Never mind. I'm backwards. But it like goes into you. Like
right.
Particles go into your body.
Well, and eating, sight. Right, okay, you can discuss what they... right, I mean, I think in general Chazal would equate smell with a more spiritual sense in terms of Ayipach Ba'apav Nishmas Chaim, right, and things like that. So that would be a better way to connect to the spiritual. But even smell would be considered way too physical to have a Nevuah. You have to negate your sense of smell in order to connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in such a way. So that's what he's differentiating. He's saying, Moshe, Yavo Elav Hadibur Bayom, V'hu Omeid Bein Shnei HaKruvim. He would go into the Mishkan, and he would hear Hashem's voice from between the Kruvim. K'moshe Sheya'ado Hashem Yisbarach, V'nodati Lecha Sham, V'dibarti Yitach Me'ala Kapores, V'amar Yisa'ala, Im Yeh Nevi'achem Hashem, V'mara Elav Esvada B'chalom Adaber Bo. Lokin, and it said, "What?" This is when Hashem was chastising Miriam and Aaron. He says, I speak to a Navi in a dream. It says, Lokein Avdi Moshe, Pe'el Pe Adaru. I don't speak that way to Moshe. I don't speak to Moshe in a dream. I speak to him Pe'el Pe. So we'll elaborate on that when we get to the next one. So the Inyan Ashlishi, so he says, Ki Anavi Kishetavu Alav Nevuah. When a regular Navi has Nevuah, Afal Pishehu Bamare Al Yidei Malach, Yechel Shu Kochosav Yiskalkel Binyano V'yagialo Mora Gadol Me'od. It would be incredibly physically taxing and draining on a Navi to have a prophecy. So he says, I mean, the lashon that he uses over here, he says he would get weak, it would hurt him, it would hurt his constitution, and he would be very fearful. Right? He says it felt like death, it feels like you're gonna die. Kishadibar Gavriel Imo Bamarav Amar Lonishar bi koach vahodi neapacholai lamashkis velo atzarti koach, right? Daniel describes the fact that he had no strength. Vomer Vani Aisi Nirdam Alpanai, Upanai Ortsa, Vomer Bamara Nefhutz Tsirai Alov, Moshe, right? So he basically shows the Psukim in Daniel, Daniel's describing his, I don't know what the word is, futility, but like how futile he felt in terms of his physical weakness and his inability to function when he was speaking just to a malach. Umoshe alav Hashem lo haya kein. Aval yavo elav adibur velo yisigeu reseis ur ada b'shum panim. He wouldn't tremble, he wouldn't get weak at all. Kimoshe nemar v'dibur Hashem Moshe panim alpanim ka'asher yidaber ishal re'eyu. Right, and this is at the end of Parshas Kisisa. Not the end, but the, yeah, towards the end. That Moshe would speak to HaKadosh Baruch Hu like a person would speak to his friend. Right, kilomar kimosha lo yera lo adam charad midibur chared. You don't get scared when you talk to your friend. Kain hayuhu Moshe alav hashalom lo yachared min adibur. V'afal pi shehu Hoya Panim B'Panim. He was speaking to God himself, and it didn't affect him, as opposed to a regular Navi would speak to a Malach, and it would affect him. And this is due to the intensity of his Seichel, his spiritual force, connecting to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and the fact that it was so close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as we have explained. So I want to explain this one a little better. Really, it's explained two and three together. The idea here is that we pretty much elaborated on it, but I just want to try to bring it home with this comment of the Maral that Moshe Rabbeinu was different than every other Navi in the sense that he was just on a completely higher spiritual level from day one, right? Meaning when he was born, what happened according to Rashi? The house fills up with light, right? It says in the Torah, they saw Vayar Ki Tovu, right? They saw that he was special. They saw there was something different about him than every other human being. They saw that, you know, that he, right? If you like Rashi's comment when Bas Paro opens up the Teva, what happens, right? What does she see when she opens up the Teva? Vihine Nar Bocher, right? So what does Rashi say? He had a different kind of voice. He sounded like a nar. He didn't sound like a tinok, right? There's a great balaturim there. Yeah, there's a balaturim says hine nar bochez bigamatria ze aron akoin. He says it wasn't Moshe who was crying. There was another kid standing on the side crying for his brother. So I don't know. I like that one. But so he Moshe Rabbeinu was different from day one. There's a fake story. I wonder if you can find it. Do we have a Mishnayos Yachin and Boaz here?
Right here.
Yeah? I wonder if it's in this one. Yeah, at the end of Kiddushin. Where is it? There's only one good fake story about Moshe Rabbeinu in the Yachin and Boaz. Yeah, so it depends. If you get an Israeli one, they don't have it. If you get an American one, no, there was. It's not censored. It shouldn't be there, but the it's in the Teferis Shmuel on Tov Sheberofim LeGehenim. So, basically, there's a he doesn't write that there's a that it's a medrash in any way, but he says Matzasi Kosuv. I found that it's written. A whole story, you know the story of Moshe Rabbeinu and the physiognomist? You know that story? Shneur Lyman talks about that? Yeah, I must have heard it from him. Here it is. So he has the whole story over here. V'lochein is orer melech aravi echad v'yishlach tzayar muvchar l'tzayar t'muna samanig agodol azeh u'lahavio elav. So, whatever. Bottom line is there's a whole story over here that Moshe Rabbeinu back in the day, the Arabs were experts in the art of physiognomy, which is they could tell your character traits based on the way your face looked, and they sent an artist to draw a portrait of Moshe Rabbeinu. So he went and he drew a portrait of Moshe Rabbeinu, and he got back and they came to the king and they brought him and he basically said that it looked really bad, right? Here it is. He says, "Im nishpat al piatzir klastar ponav shel isha zeh mafursam legadol ne'amar la'adoneinu ki hu ra me'alalim b'gaivos v'chemdas hamamon v'shrir salev v'chol chesron sheba olam shignu nefesh adam amal." Right, so he says that he would have all the worst characteristics known to man. So basically, they each pointed the finger at the other. The physiognomist says that he must have drawn a really bad picture, and the other guy says he doesn't know his own. I drew a perfect picture. He doesn't know how to read it. So the king went himself and he saw Moshe Rabbeinu and he saw that the picture was legit. So he said to him, "What's going on here? How could you be such a tzaddik if you have all these horrible traits?" And they said, "No, you're both right. That really, those are all my characteristics, and I've overcome great things in order to achieve to be the person who I am today." So that's how he alludes it. So he says, when the Mishnah says, Tov Sheberofim Leganim, so it means that in a position of Gaiva, that you could possibly come to think that you know, life and death is in your hands, and you have all the potential to be negative, so you have to overcome it. You have to be like Moshe Rabbeinu and overcome all of your potential for negativity and turn it into a positive. So, Lemaisa, I think, yeah, I did hear this from Dr. Lyman, that this story predates any Jews. In terms of telling it, it's not a Maimar Chazal anywhere. It is a non-Jewish story that has been written about both Plato and Aristotle and other non-Jewish kings throughout the years. And it's against all, you know, we quoted two Rashis, but it's against many, many, many Maimari Chazal that Moshe Rabbeinu was, in fact, different than everybody else. He was born greater than everybody else with greater spiritual potential. Now, it's important to note that the Rambam himself writes in the Mishnah Torah that every single person has the ability to be a tzaddik like Moshe Rabbeinu. He writes, an Arusha like who?
Bilam.
Not Bilam, but an Arusha like Yeravam ben Nevat. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Right? So it's like, if you wanted the prototypes, apparently, of the best tzaddik and the worst Arusha is a tzaddik like Moshe or a Arusha like Yeravam. So what does he mean, tzaddik? He never said you could be a Navi like Moshe. You could be a tzaddik like Moshe, meaning just as Moshe achieved his potential, we could also achieve our potential. So in that way, we have the ability to be as great as Moshe, but we can't be, we were not born with the talents that Moshe had. But that doesn't make Moshe less of a tzaddik, because he did achieve all of those, he did, you know, bring all those talents to fruition. So we can bring our talents to fruition. But the bottom line is, he was born on a totally different spiritual level than we were. So he was so much more spiritual than the average person, and therefore he did not need these intermediaries in order to negate his physicality. Those two intermediaries, number one, to be knocked out, to be unconscious when you receive a nevuah, and number two, to be physically drained by the nevuah. That's because you're basically, even as spiritual as a guy like Shmuel Anavi or Avram Avinu or any of the all-time great human beings who ever lived, you know, as spiritually as great spiritual giants as they were still, quote unquote, too physical to receive nevuah unless they were first negated, and therefore by negating their physicality, they were able to receive the prophecy properly. But it drained them; it hurt them. As opposed to Moshe Rabbeinu, he was right there all the time. And that's, says the Maral, that was the reason for his speech impediment. Right? The Maral has this idea that you have the physical realm, you have the spiritual realm. Right? And what bridges the gap is not his own Chiddush. It says in the Medrash Rabbah also, in Bereishis, right? You have the different segments of the soul, right? So you have there's a Medrash that says there's five parts to the soul. So it says the nefesh, help me out here, ruach, neshama, then the chaya and the yechida. I don't know what the chaya and the yechida are. I think you have to get paid more in order to know what that is. But the nefesh, the ruach, and the neshama, the nefesh is just the life force that every living thing has, and the neshama is the pure spiritual self. That's why that's never touched by this world. Right, this world can't touch your neshama. That's why we say, no matter what you did the day before, you say, Elokai neshama shenasatabi tahorahi. Your neshama is always tahor, and that's what you get back in the morning when you wake up. You don't lose your nefesh or you'd be dead, right? And the ruach is represented by the koach hadibur, right? So that's the lashon that Unkelus quotes, ruach memalala, that when nefesh, so Unkelus translates it as ruach memalala. That was his ruach, right? He had the koach hadibur. So the ruach is the bridge between the nefesh and the neshama, and that is, it's the perfect balance between the intellect, the concept of the idea, versus the physical world where everything exists. You want to take an idea and bring it into the physical world. That is done by speech, right? So I heard this b'shem Rav Moshe Shapiro. He said that's another pshat in the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, siyog l'chochma shtika, right? He says you want to protect chochma, you have to be silent. Why? Because every time you speak out an idea, you have actually brought it from the spiritual infinite realm to the physical realm, and by definition, you've limited it. You know, and it also works on a practical level, that when you have an idea in your head, it's it's boundless, right? And then when you speak it out, it's whatever people understood, or it's subject to your koach to describe it properly, right? It's not the same. So Moshe Rabbeinu's koach hadibur was lacking, because he was much more skewed in the direction of spirituality than of physicality. He was not, in a sense, the perfect human being, because he was a little bit more of a malach than he was a human being. That's why his face glowed. That's why, you know, he was scary. He was a scary person. He sounded funny. He had to wear a mask, right? Who was the perfect human being? Aaron, right? Aaron was the perfect balance between spirituality and physicality. That's why he was the speaker. He was the great speaker. That's why he was able to bring shalom between Ish L'Re'eo, Ish L'Ishto, because he was this perfect human role model for everybody else, right? It's Lahavdil a little bit that I once read an article by Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, and he said that he had three major Rabbeim in his life, right? They said when he was a young man, he learned by Rav Yitzchak Huttner, and then when he was older, he learned by Rav Soloveitchik, and then he also from Chaim Berlin, but he continued to be close with him when he was older, Rav Aaron Soloveitchik. And he said that in a way, he related best to Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, because he said that when it came to Rav Huttner and Rav Soloveitchik, he said they were like these towering figures who he couldn't really relate to. He could learn from them, but he never had a havamina or a saga that he was going to be like them. He said that, but he said Rav Aaron Soloveitchik was, he said, like, if I was only much better, then I would be him. You know, if I was just a better version of myself, then I could relate to that. I could sort of be him, and I could, you know. So that's the idea. Aaron HaKohen, you know, people looked at Aaron HaKohen and they said, like, if I was just a better person, then I would be an Aaron HaKohen. Nobody ever looked at Moshe Rabbeinu and said, if I was just better, then I would be Moshe. You know, nobody had any hasaga of becoming Moshe, right? That's why, this is actually pointed out by the Sefer Eikarim, that Moshe Rabbeinu never performed any miracles on his own. He only performed miracles when Kadosh Baruch Hu commanded him. It's like, as opposed to, let's say, Eliyahu HaNavi on Har HaKarmel, where he said, that's a big discussion in the Halachas and the Rambam, in terms of, was Eliyahu HaNavi commanded to bring down the fire on the Mizbeach on Har HaKarmel or not? So that's a discussion in the Rishonim. Yeah?
What about Korach?
We'll try to come, you know, maybe we'll be able to discuss that a little later date. That's what did in Moshe, according to the Sefer HaYikarim, that's what did in Moshe Rabbeinu. After that, whatever. Bekitzer, the Sefer HaYikarim says that the reason the Mei Meriva was such a chait was that Moshe Rabbeinu should not have waited for Hashem to command him to bring water from the Be'er. He should have done it on his own. And that's why. Because he waited for Hashem to command him, it was all downhill from there. He never had a chance. And Meshech Chachma asked, what are you talking about? Moshe Rabbeinu never did miracles on his own. If he would have done miracles on his own, people would have thought he was some kind of God. So Eliyahu Navi, nobody ever had a havamina that he would be some kind of God. Like, there was never that chance. Moshe Rabbeinu was dafka careful not to do miracles on his own. So then says the Meshech Chachma, yeah, but when it came to Korach, Hashem never commanded him to do that. And therefore he said on his own, we're going to have a showdown. And he said, there's going to be, if the ground's going to swallow you up. So then once he did that, he was Mechayev himself. He said, once he did that, and he protected his own reputation by performing an ace, then when it came to protecting Klal Yisrael, he was obligated also to perform an ace. And the fact that he didn't do it, that was his that indicted him, you know, because of the fact that Hashem had to command him first. Right, that's the Meshech Chachma's explanation of the Sefer HaYikarim. But anyway, so Moshe Rabbeinu was this other type of individual than everybody else, and therefore it explains a lot of, you know, a lot of his quirkiness, because he and that's why he never had to be physically broken in order to achieve his nevuah, because he was right there all the time. And so in terms of Aaron, he was not there, and that's why he was different than Moshe, and same for Miriam. Okay. And last one, Inyan Harivi, Ki Kol HaNeviim Lo Tanua Chaleim Ruach HaNevuah Birtzonam. They could not choose to receive a nevuah. Ela Biratzon Hashem Yisbarach, right? Hashem chose. Shehare Yamor HaNavi Yamim Oshanim Lo Sava Lo HaNevuah Vivakesh Min HaBore Sheyodia Lo Davar BeNevuah V'Yamut Ad Sheyinabe Oso Achar HaYamim O Achar HaChadashim. Oh, Shalom, right? Now, it could happen, it could have lasted a long time that he would go without a prophecy. could have gone days or months. Oh, shelo yodi b'shempanim, or he would never receive a nevuah, right? Who was famous for trying and never receiving a nevuah? So in the footnote here, he quotes Baruch ben Neriah, but I wasn't thinking of him. I was thinking of Shaul HaMelech. Shaul HaMelech, when he wanted to know what to do, and before he, you know, decided to go to the Balas Ov and raise Shmuel from the grave, he tried very hard to receive a nevuah, and he was not successful. Right, and then he says there were yeshivas for people who were trying to become neviim. He quotes from Elisha, Obalo, and nevuah. Doesn't mean that it always worked. Right, we have it in this week's parsha. Also, he's not quoting from this week's parsha, but we have by the Benos Slavchad, right, where it says that Moshe Rabbeinu brought their taina to the Rabbanu Shalom. We have it again from in next week's parsha with the Bnei Gad and Bnei Reuven. So we have a lot of times that those who presented ideas to Moshe Rabbeinu, he said, okay, I'll check it out, and he would go to Kodesh Baruch Hu and get an answer. So right, Daber al Aaron achicha vel yavo b'chol yisrael kodesh amru chachmina zechon al bracha Aaron bal yavo Moshe b'val yavo. Bein Moshe b'val yavo. Right? Aaron was b'val yavo, but not Moshe. Okay, so that is the Yisod HaShvi'i. Maybe just one more thing that we sort of glossed over, that the Rambam doesn't speak out over here, but perhaps it's part of the first Yisod, which is that Moshe Rabbeinu's nevuah was different qualitatively because it was given by HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself as opposed to through an intermediary. So what does that mean practically? There is a nafkamina in reality. Meaning, what did a Navi have to do when he received a Nevuah? He had to interpret it, right? That's the term that they use. A Navi would receive an aspaklaria she'ena mi'ira, right? As opposed to, and that's also alluded to in the Pesukim in Baal Oscha, right? So where HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I would present a vision to other Nevi'im. I would give them a picture, I would give them something that they would then have to interpret. Right, for example, I forgot who says this word, but they say one of the explanations of what was so great about Avraham Avinu by the Akedah is when HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, Kach es bincha zichidcha asher avtes Yitzchak, right, and he said, I want you to v'haleo le'ola. So the fact that Avraham Avinu could have interpreted the Nevuah differently. So part of the greatness of Avraham Avinu was his intellectual honesty in saying, if I interpret it this way, it really doesn't make any sense, but I really believe that's what Hashem is telling me. You know, and to go forward with that instead of just saying, nah, it can't be, it's impossible that that's what Hashem would have meant, and therefore I'm not going to interpret it that way. You know, but really, really, all these nevuos are subject to interpretation, and different people, by definition, would interpret nevuos differently, based on their own style, their own, their own personalities would be involved, right? That's the Gemara when they dafka brought the nevuah. They didn't want to bring it to a male navi. They wanted to bring it to a female navi because nashim rachmanis, right? They wanted to have a person who's generally more compassionate to interpret the prophecy, and so there was subject to an individual's interpretation, as opposed to Moshe Rabbeinu, whose prophecies were never subject to interpretation. And this goes back to what we were saying, I think, in the first session, where there's a difference between when HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives you over something, by definition, it's going to have to be perfect in every way, right? So the fact that Hashem gave over Nevuah to Moshe Rabbeinu, the Nevuah could not be subject to interpretation. And it wasn't just word for word, letter for letter. It was understood to perfection. Because like we said back then, if the perfect teacher teaches you something, by definition, you will understand it perfectly. Right? And that could also be the pshat when Chazal say that Moshe Rabbeinu understood, right, kol ma'ashe talmid vasek asid l'eschadish. He understood every chiddush that was ever going to be able to be said. Meaning, what does that mean? Like he handed him the blue Rabbi Akiva Eiger, and he gave him the fancy toast with the footnotes and everything. And no, it means that, like, by definition, he understood the Torah perfectly. So any chiddush that was legit, by definition, he understood it. So therefore, it was clear to him in the words themselves. So Moshe Rabbeinu could not have understood the Nevuah in any way but a perfect way, because it was given over from the Ribbono Shel Olam himself. And just one last ha'ara, the Rav Shechter likes to quote from the Barditchever that he finds sometimes that the standard interpretation when a Navi says Ko Amar Hashem, when a Navi says, so what does that mean? It means that this is my interpretation of what Hashem said. Ko Amar Hashem. This is sort of what Hashem said, meaning I believe that these are the words of Hashem, but not that this is Milo B'Milo, what HaKadosh Baruch Hu said. So we do find that Moshe Rabbeinu has said Ko Amar Hashem as well. So usually that's the difference between Moshe Rabbeinu and the Navi, and every other Navi, is that Moshe Rabbeinu would not say Ko Amar Hashem. He would say Vaydaber Hashem Moshe Lemor, and this is what he said. There's no Ko. Right, so the Barditchever explains that not every nevuah that Moshe received was Baspaklari Ami'ira. Only those nevuahs that were Torah, meaning when Moshe Rabbeinu was taught Torah from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then it had to be perfect. It had to be letter for letter, you know, even the tagging on top of the letters, right? It had to be everything. But when Moshe Rabbeinu was given a regular Horoas Sha'ah from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so every other Navi, they didn't prophesy Torah, they prophesied Horoas Sha'ah. So therefore, when Moshe Rabbeinu was given a Horoas Sha'ah, for example, the difference between Pesach Mitzrayim versus Pesach Doros, there was no mitzvah, the Doros, for people to stay in their houses, you know, ready to go and have blood on the doorposts and things like that. That was only in Pesach Mitzrayim. So in those cases, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave Moshe Rabbeinu a regular nevuah, whereas when he was giving him Torah Lidoros, then it had to be a perfect nevuah, so there would be no confusion, there would be no telephone game going on, and therefore he was able to receive the Aspaklari Amihira. But it doesn't mean that it was always that way for Moshe Rabbeinu. These other qualifications were always that way because that was who Moshe was. But in terms of the level of clarity, it's not necessary that a Kodesh Baruch Hu would have given that level of clarity to Moshe Rabbeinu unless he was teaching him Torah. All right, there's more you could say on that idea, but let's hold it.